Welcome to The Challenge, where we'll discuss the challenges that life gives us. Challenges from the perspective of people with disabilities, and challenges from those who encounter a disabled person in any walk of life. If you have comments about the show or would like to be a guest, call a listener feedback line at 206-333-0257. That's 206-333-0257. Or send email to challenge8255@gmail.com. And now your host, Steve Bauer.
Well, welcome into program number 2. Glad you came back after that inaugural run last week. And this time, we're going to do something that sounds kind of strange, but I hope you enjoy it. I'm going to interview someone who shares the same name as myself. Now, our middle names are different, which is probably a good thing. My guest this week is Steve Bauer of California, and yes, there is another one of me, well, I guess sort of out there, and we'll kind of unravel this bit of a puzzle over the next few minutes. Steve, welcome into the show.
Well, thanks, Steve. I don't think there's two of you, definitely. We happen to share a name and a lot more than that, which gets very confusing. Greetings, and thanks for inviting me on.
We have several things in common, some of which is we are somewhat close to the same age, both blind, and we both were in radio broadcasting. I'm still in it, but you're not, but we'll go into that. We both have our ham radio licenses, and the similarities just sort of keep going. And what was it, 1990? We met in Denver at an ACB national convention, was it?
Yes, it was indeed. And I'm actually going to go to Louisville, so hopefully you'll make it there and we can meet again after all these years.
Well, over the next few minutes, we're going to talk about some of the challenges that you have experienced in radio and other things, and we'll just see where this road takes us. For the listener's benefit, I was involved in radio since I was a senior in high school and did the college radio thing, and then toward the end of college and for a couple of years, worked at a little country music station and did the weird hours, the weekends, and then I did middays for a while and then afternoon drive for a while, and got out of that radio and went to work for a bank and still did some part-time stuff, and I've been doing on ACB Radio Interactive a smooth jazz show for, 6 years now. And for about 4 years, I've been doing a Sunday jazz brunch on a local FM station. So now, I did that just so we could compare notes. Talk to me about your schooling. Were you mainstreamed? Did you go to the school for the blind? And how'd you get into radio? And what basically, give me the Reader's Digest version, if you will, what you have done in radio, per se.
Well, I was mainstreamed and went to a school in Santa Barbara that had, Santa Barbara, California, which had, I think, 7 or 8 blind kids. They sent all the blind kids to one school in the city. Went to my own junior high school and high school and was the only blind student there. And went to UC Santa Barbara. There were, I think, maybe 4 or 5 blind kids or blind students who weren't kids that didn't want to be called kids at age 18. But at any rate, radio is something I was always interested in, and frankly, rehab counselors and teachers and even folks I met in radio said, you know, how the heck is a blind person going to do this? So I kind of put it aside, went to school with getting an English major. I did get a speech communications minor and intended to go into teaching. And I guess my junior year at UCSB, I decided I'm going to go check out the campus radio station and see if there's something I can do there and maybe get it out of my system. Well, I went in there and started helping out with the news broadcasts, very simple things, carting up what they call actualities, which are famous people saying sound bites or reporters saying sound bites or whatever that we used on our news, and putting those onto old tape cartridges that the newscaster could then play, and got the idea it'd be fun to do a music show. And so I put Braille labels on a few hundred of the then records, as in phonograph records, and did my first Midnight to Six music show in August of 1976, I think. And I just loved it. I mean, I just went nuts playing rock and roll on the radio and labeled more and more of the records and ended up getting an afternoon show in addition to my Midnight to Six show, and went on for a year and actually then became what KCSB called Rock Cell Leader, which was kind of halfway between patrol leader and music director. And then a few months later became the training director at KCSB, where I was training new students that wanted to do shows, and just got a beep, I'm not sure what that meant. After a couple of years at KCSB, I saw an ad for a Midnight to Six board operator, which is basically a guy that sits and doesn't talk but makes sure that everything is running right at a radio station for a local station in town that was playing beautiful music, KRUZ. I applied for the job and made a big mistake in that situation because the gentleman that hired me said, well, I know blind people have better hearing than everybody else, so whenever anything goes wrong here, I want you to be my filter and to let me know immediately. And I wanted the job so badly, and I was young and stupid, and so I said, oh, yes, sure, sir, I'll do that. And, of course, I got blamed for everything that went wrong at the radio station. He fired me twice and rehired me twice in a seven-month period. And 7 months later, I, probably because I'd proven myself there, got a job at another radio station that was full-time. And that was in January, actually New Year's Day, New Year's Eve, if you will. 1979 was my first day at KDV, and that turned into a great situation. I ended up staying there 14 years. It was beautiful music when I went to work there on the FM, and the AM had too many formats to even mention. I had different roles in various of them. The most fun one was we did an all-news format for a couple of years, and I wasn't a reporter, but I actually wrote a lot of stories, you know, from the police blotter and from some of our local reporters and that sort of thing. I had gotten, by then, a Sagem Braille printer and had bought an Apple computer, and a college buddy of mine actually wrote me a Braille translation program that would translate UPI copy off the teletype into Braille, so I was able to read the state and national news from UPI on an old clunker Braille printer. Ended up doing that for a couple years and some other formats. The AM finally went Spanish at one point. I don't speak Spanish, so I moved over to the FM. Did mornings on a classical music format for a couple years. In 1985, I made the move over to KMGQ. Started off doing music, adult contemporary music, and part-time. And then at 1993, I left KDB and hired on full-time as the host of the Smooth Jazz Evening Show, and also became music director at that point, and stayed there until 2003, when the station had by then been bought by a large conglomerate, Cumulus Media. I was downsized in 1993, and that was the end of my radio career.
Yeah, it's interesting because over the 6 years now that I've been involved in Smooth Jazz, and more since I've been on a real radio station, in addition to the internet jazz show, often I come in contact with different record promoters, and one of the first questions they say to me is, man, you moved from California to Kansas. What do you do that for? And then I had to explain things. So you must have made quite a few friends when you were doing the Smooth Jazz thing.
Yeah, and I actually got, I've gotten some of the same comments. Well, for folks who don't know, a music director is basically a person who, in the best of all possible worlds, gets to listen to all the music that comes in, and hence also gets hounded, if you will, by lots of record company people. Play my record. And, you know, I used to get literally hundreds of CDs a month, and we maybe added, when I started off, maybe a couple of dozen new songs, and when I left the radio station with the tightening up of the playlist and the consultants, maybe half a dozen songs per month. So Yes, you have a lot of friends, or I'm not sure if friends, they want to be your friend, but people that are calling you on the phone and taking you out to dinner and schmoozing you any way they can to get a chance to talk up their record and why your listeners would just love it, because obviously when a radio station puts a record on the air, the public hears the song, and hopefully the CD sells. And that's how they make their money, because these promoters are paid by the record labels, or in some cases by the artists, to get their records out there and promote them. And so, yes, I had a lot of associates and a lot of great people that I worked with over the years, and I got exactly the same thing. In fact, when I abruptly left KMGQ, it was one of those situations where I was called into an office, and it's been great having you here, but we can't afford you anymore, and you know we're going to go to satellite. So fill out the paperwork and call us tomorrow, and you can come clean out your desk, give us your keys, go home. Thank you very much. So I left very abruptly and didn't get a chance to really tell anybody, and it made it out in one of the trade publications called Radio and Records that all the music directors and program directors and record company people read that I had left the station. And, of course, Steve, your show was going by then, and I got several phone calls from people saying, my God, that was a quick move, California to Wichita, you know, what's going on? And I had to explain that there was two of us, and then a couple people said, well, yeah, I talked to him, but he said he's blind, so it's got to be the same person. And I would say, no, and the person would say, well, you guys can't both be blind. And I'm, well, yes, actually we are.
Yeah, it's just so funny. Well, it is just a huge coincidence. And well, you lucked out. I haven't had a record promoter take me to dinner yet. The perks aren't there, but that's okay. It is interesting, in my particular case, my show, my program director basically has said, I don't know anything about smooth jazz other than what I hear, and so you pick the music, and to this date, he has stayed out of my hair and let me pick the music. And you're right, these people will call you up and tell you this is the best album they've ever heard in their life, and you throw it into the CD player, and you start playing it, and shake your head and go, huh, well, okay, whatever. In fact, I've got probably a half a dozen CDs here from artists I've never heard of, and I'm not sure I'm going to be able to play their stuff.
You're listening to The Challenge. To receive email updates about the show and our guests, you're invited to join our mailing list. Simply send a blank message to challenge, 8255-subscribe at googlegroups.com. That's challenge, 8255-subscribe at googlegroups.com.
Of course, the technology continues to change, so what you dealt with at your most recent radio station probably isn't even the same kind of studio and setup that's out there today, because it changes so often. But the one area that I find challenging is with so many CDs coming in, and sometimes they come in, at least for me, on a daily basis, and it takes a lot of time to go through them, sort through them, see if you can find information about them on the internet. If I can't find the tracks for the particular CD, then I try and scan them with the Opticon. If that doesn't work, then I beg my wife to read them to me. But I'm sure there's a lot of information that I'm missing. How did you deal with going through all of the CDs and just the plethora of printed material that would come into you as music director of a radio station?
Well, when I started in 1993, there was very little available electronically. And I have actually never owned an Opticon or a scanner, and so I relied very heavily on other people to read me stuff, and I was very lucky. I was in the same situation you were when I started off. The Smooth Jazz Show was an evening thing from 7 to midnight and on Sunday mornings, and the rest of the broadcast schedule was an adult contemporary format. And the first two program directors that I worked for knew nothing about smooth jazz. Didn't care. We didn't even call it smooth jazz, actually, back then. We started out, we called it Jazz and a Touch of Soul. And all the local shows that were on the air had different names for what they were doing, and smooth jazz kind of became the nationally known moniker for this format. But I had a paid reader who worked with me a couple of hours a day, 2 days a week, to read the most important stuff. And then I had a whole bunch of different volunteers, and they came from various places. Got some from the university that were interested in getting into radio, and that was their foot in the door, is to come read stuff to me. I also managed to get a good relationship with a school that taught, it was an intensive school that taught English just down the street from the radio station. And some of their advanced students would come over, and it was good practice for them to read and interact with a lot of English stuff, and a bit of a challenge for me because there were issues with accent and how much they, you know, knew and could understand and could read. But a combination of that, I guess, I managed to get through a lot of the faxes that came in back in those days and read the liner notes on some of the CDs and that sort of thing. And of course, then as time progressed, more and more stuff became available on the internet. And so I was able to get stuff online, and I got people to email me stuff instead of faxing me stuff. And so it actually became easier and easier, which was a good thing, because when the corporation took over the radio station from the local guys that owned it, I lost my paid person that read to me, and then I totally relied on volunteers. And by then I had a couple of coworkers who were just great folks that were willing to help me out and read me stuff. So kind of a combination of things, the internet and readers, and, you know, also I had a relationship with people, and a lot of the record company folks I knew then knew that I was blind, and so as part of their schmooze, they would actually give me lots of information. So I would sit there on music calls day with either a braille writer or a computer and just, you know, madly writing down things they told me. And so I guess it was, you know, kind of a combination of things to get everything done. And then, of course, for labeling the CDs, I would sit down with either my paid person or later a volunteer and just make labels for the CDs. And I used to use the sheets of Braillables from American Thermoform Corporation, just, you know, write out 30 CD titles on one sheet and then have the person cut them out for me and stick them on the CDs. And that was a lot quicker than trying to use a Dymo labeler to label all those CDs, because there were a lot of them that came through.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. Well, let's see. Another challenge, I would think, for you would be getting to and from work. And with radio, you don't always work normal hours. How did you deal with the transportation aspect at the radio stations where you worked?
Well, for the most part, Santa Barbara being a fairly small town, I was able to, in some cases, walk to work. I actually lived within walking distance of several places I worked, and KDB was in the same place the whole time I worked there. KMGQ moved, I think, there was actually four different locations where KMGQ was at. And one of those situations, I actually had to get my wife to drive me home because I was working till midnight, and the buses quit running before then. The other situations, I actually managed to be able to take the bus pretty much. I worked overnights for several years, and I would take the last bus anywhere in Santa Barbara that would get me down to the radio station at 11:45, and then, of course, have a couple buses I could take in the morning. And when I worked mornings at KDB, I moved close enough to the radio station that I could walk there. And, you know, walking over there at 4:30 in the morning, there was nobody on the street or anything, so it was no big deal. I mean, I could either walk home or take the bus home. It's pretty lucky in that regard that, you know, Santa Barbara has a great bus system, and so for a town that size. So I was very lucky in that regard that transportation really wasn't too much of an issue. Sometimes getting out to events was a challenge. I did a lot of live remotes, as they call them, where I would have to go out and, you know, show up at a car dealership or a shopping center or a coffee shop or whatever, and do either make a personal appearance or in some cases do the show live from out there for a couple of hours. And sometimes those were challenging getting to, but again, combination of the buses and my coworkers and interns at the radio station, it typically wasn't too much of a problem.
I'm Steve Bauer, and we're actually sitting in the Our Place radio chat room, and I'm talking with Steve Bauer of California. And it's kind of fun to compare all of our notes. So far, I have not done a remote broadcast, and I think that, to me, would be a real challenge for a blind guy to do, to interact with the listeners and to do all of the tasks that need to be done during a remote broadcast. I know that, for me, I have, on the air, I have not ever mentioned the fact that I'm blind. And we have an upscale shopping center here in town that does free jazz concerts during the summer. They do five. They used to do more, but costs keep going up, so they've dropped her back to five. And for the past 3 years, I have had the opportunity to, not solely, but I have been the co-MC, the program director, and I MC the concerts together. And I guess because I'm not a full-time guy, they think that they need to have somebody with some credentials there with me. But we're able to quite successfully work together and MC the concerts. And of course, as you know, you do something like that, you've got to, you know, this all made possible by this business. And so I've usually got anywhere from 5 to 7 pages of Braille. And on this particular stage, there's nowhere to put your Braille except on your fat belly. So I just slap it on my belly and read it. And for many people, especially those that are up close, because there are anywhere from 3 to 5,000 people at these concerts, that is their first indication that I am blind. First of all, I guess a two-part question. Did you ever mention it on the air that you're blind? And how did you find interacting with the audience? What challenges did you have to interact with people when they came to see you and they meet you and actually doing a remote broadcast?
Yeah, I don't think I ever mentioned, I think once I mentioned that I was blind on the air, and that's when I was working for the news station, and I interviewed a woman who was involved with audio description for several of our local theaters. 3/4 of the way into the interview, I just mentioned that, you know, some of you may not know, but I'm blind myself, and I love what, you know, these people are doing, which I did, and, you know, mentioned a couple of specific instances of plays that I'd been to and where audio description made it possible for me to know what was going on, as opposed to just sitting and listening to what I would be able to hear without any audio description. But on the jazz show, I don't think I ever mentioned that I was blind. Obviously, a lot of people at the remotes knew that I was. And I guess the biggest challenge was having a booth and not being aware when people would come up. And usually I would go out to these events with an intern or somebody from the promotions department who would be there to help set up the booth and help hand out literature. And I just had to tell all these folks to, you know, and we developed various ways to let me know that people were just coming up, because people would just come up and stand there and stare. And so I would get the person that I was with to kind of say, hey, what's your name? This is Steve Bauer from, you know, The Rendezvous, which is the name of the show I did in the evening, and start, you know, rely on that person to get the conversation going. And that happened sometimes, and sometimes people would come up and say something, and maybe sometimes realize I was blind or maybe not. And, you know, I got a couple of, you know, are you really Steve Bauer? It was a little easier when I was actually on the air, because then they would see me up there talking and hear me talking. The events that we weren't on the air but were just doing a personal appearance, I think, might have actually been more challenging, because, you know, they didn't know who the heck I was if they hadn't met me before. So I never fortunately had to do one by myself. There were some times that I went out there with somebody else and that person would have to leave, especially when we got bought by the big corporation and the promotions department was working for 4 radio stations, and they would get me set up and then go set somebody, you know, one of the other stations' booth up somewhere else. And those times that I were alone were very difficult, because I would sometimes realize people were there not saying anything to me and be in kind of an awkward situation where, hi, you know, I'm Steve Bauer. And sometimes they'd walk away and sometimes, you know, they'd talk. So I really asked management and the promotions folks to always have somebody there with me to help in those situations, and they were very accommodating, and so I always, my request was granted, and I always had at least one other person there helping me out.
Well, unfortunately, we're running out of time, and my conversation with Steve continued for enough time that we're going to have him back for next week. So we'll conclude our conversation with Steve Bauer from California next week in program number 3. And again, if you'd like to be on the show, please send me an email to challenge8255@gmail.com, or you can call the comment line at 206-333-0257. You know, being in radio, I don't know what it is. I always say it's a terminal disease. Once you get it, you can't get rid of it. And I have worked in radio on and off since a senior in high school. Started out in the college radio station stuff, then went to the little country station where I did the weird hours, moved into the midday slot, and then did afternoon drive for a while. Was at that station for a little over 3 years. And then I left there and went to work for a bank, which I'm still working for. And a few years later, I began working with some of the people I'd worked with at the radio station at what was then just one FM station. They needed somebody to go on the air and to announce severe weather stuff, put out the bulletins, and they didn't have part-time people that could really do a very good job. And I was available, and since being a ham radio operator, I enjoyed doing weather stuff, so started doing that, and then the company kept buying other stations and sold 2 and 3 times, but it wound up being a group of stations, 4 FM and 3 AM, and I continued doing this severe weather thing for about 14 years. And the bad thing was, in the severe weather season, I could be up and on the radio most of the night, and I still had to go to work, so it was beginning to wear a little bit, but I did that, and then that sort of came to an end naturally. And in talking to another group of stations, trying to get them to let me do weather because I thought that's all I could do, I said, well, you could let me do a jazz show since I've been doing a jazz show on ACB Radio Interactive. And program director said, okay, tell me more. And I did. And in about 5 minutes, we had a deal. And so I'm doing a jazz show on a local FM station. So it's kind of just one of those things always in your blood, and you can hardly ever get rid of it. I was telling my wife the other day, sometimes I just curse the day I got interested in radio. But I have to blame my dad for that, because he used to bring home equipment. He worked at Boeing, and he used to bring home equipment, tape recorders and microphones and things. It was pretty junky equipment, basically stuff they weren't using anymore. And I played with it and set up my own little studio, and I'll blame my dad. He got me started, so that's pretty well how radio got into my blood, and I don't know how I can get rid of it. Well, that's going to do it for this week's show. Next week, we continue talking to Steve Bauer of California. Hope you can join us for that.
If you have comments about the show or would like to be a guest, call a listener feedback line at 206-333-0257. That's 206-333-0257. Or send email to challenge8255@gmail.com. To receive email alerts about the show each week, including information about our guests, send a blank message to challenge8255-subscribe@googlegroups.com. That's a blank message to challenge8255-subscribe@googlegroups.com. Thanks for listening, and stay strong when encountering the challenges of life. Please join us next week at this same time for another edition of The Challenge from ACB Radio Mainstream.